Chapter 8. Mr. Freely, whose complexion had become decidedly yellower during the last half hour, did not resist this proposition. He hoped they should meet again under happier circumstances. "It's my belief the man is his brother," said Letitia, when they were all on their way home. "Nonsense," said Mr. Palfrey. "Really's got no brother," he said, "so many and many a time. He's an orphan. He's got nothing but uncles leastwise, one. What's it matter what an idiot says? What call at Freely to tell lies?" Letitia tossed her head and was silent. Mr. Freely, left alone with his affectionate brother Jacob, brooded over the possibility of luring him out of the town early the next morning and getting him conveyed to Gilsbrook without further betrayals. But the thing was difficult. He saw clearly that, if he took Jacob himself, his absence, conjoined with the disappearance of the stranger, would either cause the conviction that he was really a relative, or would oblige him to the dangerous course of inventing a story to account for his disappearance and his own absence at the same time. David groaned. There come occasions when falsehood is felt to be inconvenient. It would, perhaps, have been a longer-headed device if he had never told any of those clever fibs about his uncles, grand and otherwise. For the Palfreys were simple people and shared the popular prejudice against lying. Even if he could get Jacob away this time, what security was there that he would not come again, having once found the way? Oh guineas! Oh lozenges! What enviable people those were who had never robbed their mothers, and had never told fibs. David spent a sleepless night, while Jacob was snoring close by. Was this the upshot of traveling to the Indies, and acquiring experience combined with anecdote? He rose at break of day, as he had once before done, when he was in fear of Jacob, and took all gentle means to rouse this fatal brother from his deep sleep. He dared not be loud, because his apprentice was in the house, and would report everything. But Jacob was not to be roused. He fought out with his fist at the unknown cause of disturbance, turned over, and snored again. He must be left, to wake as he would. David, with a cold perspiration on his brow, confessed to himself that Jacob could not be got away that day. Mr. Palfrey came over to Grimworth before noon, with a natural curiosity, to see how his future son-in-law got on with the stranger to whom he was so benevolently inclined. He found a crowd round the shop. All Grimworth by this time had heard how Freely had been fastened on by an idiot who called him Rother Zavy, and the younger population seemed to find the singular stranger an unwearying source of fascination, while the householders dropped in one by one to inquire into the incident. "Why don't you send him to the workhouse?" said Mr. Prettyman. "You'll have a row with him and the children presently, and he'll eat you up. The workhouse is the proper place for him. Let his kin claim him, if he's got any." "Those may be your feelings, Mr. Prettyman," said David, his mind quite enfeebled by the torture of his position. "What? Is he your brother, then?" said Mr. Prettyman, looking at his neighbor Freely rather sharply. "All men are our brothers, and idiots particular so," said Mr. Freely, who, like many other traveled men, was not master of the English language. "Come, come, if he's your brother, tell the truth, man," said Mr. Prettyman, with growing suspicion. "Aren't be ashamed of your own flesh and blood." Mr. Palfrey was present, and also had his eye on Freely. It is difficult for a man to believe in the advantage of a truth which will disclose him to have been a liar. In this critical moment, David shrank from this immediate disgrace in the eyes of his future father-in-law. "Mr. Prettyman," he said, "I take your observations as an insult. I've no reason to be otherwise than proud of my own flesh and blood. If this poor man was my brother more than all men are, I should say so." A tall figure darkened the door, and David, lifting his eyes in that direction, saw his eldest brother, Jonathan, on the door sill. "I'll stay why, Zavy," shouted Jacob, as he too caught sight of his eldest brother, and, Running behind the counter, he clutched David hard. What? He is here, said Jonathan Foe, coming forward. Why mother would have known nay, as he'd been away so long, but I must see after him. And it struck me, he was very like come after you, because we'd been talking of you o' late, and where you lived. David saw there was no escape. He smiled a ghastly smile. What, is this a relation of yours, sir? Said Mr. Palfrey to Jonathan. Aye, it's my innocent of a brother, sure enough, said honest Jonathan. Fine trouble and cost he is to us, in TA cheating and other things, but we must bear what's laid on us. And your name's Freely, is it? Said Mr. Prettyman. Nay, nay, my name's Foe, I know nothing o' Freely's, said Jonathan, curtly. He added, turning to David, I must take some news to mother about Jacob. Shall I take him with me, or will you undertake to send him back? Take him, if you can make him loose his hold of me, said David, feebly. Is this gentleman here in the confectionery line your brother, then, sir? Said Mr. Prettyman, feeling that it was an occasion on which format language must be used. I don't want to own him, said Jonathan, unable to resist a movement of indignation that had never been allowed to satisfy itself. He ran away from home with good reasons in his pocket years ago. He didn't want to be owned again, I reckon. Mr. Palfrey left the shop. He felt his own pride too severely wounded by the sense that he had let himself be fooled to feel curiosity for further details. The most pressing business was to go home and tell his daughter that Freely was a poor sneak, probably a rascal, and that her engagement was broken off. Mr. Prettyman stayed, with some internal self-gratulation, that he had never given in to Freely, and that Mr. Chaloner would see now what sort of fellow it was that he had put over the heads of older parishioners. He considered it due from him, Mr. Prettyman, that, for the interests of the parish, he should know all that was to be known about this derliper. Grimworth would have people coming from Botany Bay to settle in it, if things went on in this way. It soon appeared that Jacob could not be made to quit his dear brother David except by force. He understood, with a clearness equal to that of the most intelligent mind, that Jonathan would take him back to skim milk, apple dumpling, broad beans, and pork. And he had found a paradise in his brother's shop. It was a difficult matter to use force with Jacob, for he wore heavy nailed boots, and if his pitchfork had been mastered, he would have resorted without hesitation to kicks. Nothing short of using guile to bind him hand and foot would have made all parties safe. Let him stay, said David, with desperate resignation, frightened above all things at the idea of further disturbances in his shop, which would make his exposure all the more conspicuous. Oh, you go away again, and tomorrow I can, perhaps, get him to go to Gillsbrook with me. He'll follow me fast enough, I dare say, he added, with a half groan. Very well, said Jonathan, gruffly. Don't see why you shouldn't have some trouble and expense with him as well as the rest of us. But mind you bring him back safe and soon, else mother'll never rest. On this arrangement being concluded, Mr. Prettyman begged Mr. Jonathan Foe to go and take a snack with him, an invitation which was quite acceptable. And as honest Jonathan had nothing to be ashamed of, it is probable that he was very frank in his communications to the civil draper, who, pursuing the benefit of the parish, hastened to make all the information he could gather about Freely common parochial property. You may imagine that the meeting of the club at the Woolpack that evening was unusually lively. Every member was anxious to prove that he had never liked Freely, as he called himself. Foe was his name, was it? Fox would have been more suitable. The majority expressed a desire to see him hooted out of the town. Mr. Freely did not venture over his door sill that day, for he knew Jacob would keep at his side, and there was every probability that they would have a train of juvenile followers. He sent to engage the Woolpack gig for an early hour the next morning, but this order was not kept religiously a secret by the landlord. Mr. Freely was informed that he could not have the gig till 7, and the Grimworth people were early risers. Perhaps they were more alert than usual on this particular morning, for when Jacob, with a bag of sweets in his hand, was induced to mount the gig with his brother David, the inhabitants of the marketplace were looking out of their doors and windows, and at the turning of the street there was even a muster of apprentices and schoolboys, who shouted as they passed in, what Jacob took to be a very merry and friendly way, nodding and grinning in return. "Uzzay, David Foe. How's your uncle?" was their morning's greeting. Like other pointed things, it was not altogether impromptu. Even this public derision was not so crushing to David as the horrible thought that though he might succeed now in getting Jacob home again, there would never be any security against his coming back, like a wasp to the honey pot. As long as David lived at Grimworth, Jacob's return would be hanging over him. But could he go on living at Grimworth, an object of ridicule, discarded by the Palfreys, after having reveled in the consciousness that he was an envied and prosperous confectioner? David liked to be envied. He minded less about being loved. His doubts on this point were soon settled. The mind of Grimworth became obstinately set against him and his viands, and the new school being finished, the eating room was closed. If there had been no other reason, sympathy with the Palfreys, that respectable family who had lived in the parish time out of mind, would have determined all well-to-do people to decline Freely's goods. Besides, he had absconded with his mother's guineas. Who knew what else he had done, in Jamaica or elsewhere, before he came to Grimworth, worming himself into families under false pretenses. Females shuddered. Dreadful suspicions gathered round him. His green eyes, his bow legs had a criminal aspect. The rector disliked the sight of a man who had imposed upon him, and all boys who could not afford to purchase, hooted "Avid Foe" as they passed his shop. Certainly no man now would pay anything for the goodwill of Mr. Freely's business, and he would be obliged to quit it without a peculium so desirable towards defraying the expense of moving. In a few months the shop in the marketplace was again to let, and Mr. David Foe, alias Mr. Edward Freely, had gone nobody at Grimworth knew whither. In this way the demoralization of Grimworth women was checked. Young Mrs. Steen renewed her efforts to make light mince pies, and having at last made a batch so excellent that Mr. Steen looked at her with complacency as he ate them, and said they were the best he had ever eaten in his life, she thought less of bubbles and renegades ever after. The secrets of the finer cookery were revived in the breasts of matronly housewives, and daughters were again anxious to be initiated in them. You will further, I hope, be glad to bear that some purchases of drapery made by Pretty Penny, in preparation for her marriage with Mr. Freely, came in quite as well for her wedding with young Towers, as if they had been made expressly for the latter occasion. For Penny's complexion had not altered, and blue always became at best. Here ends the story of Mr. David Foe, confectioner, and his brother Jacob. And we see in it, I think, an admirable instance of the unexpected forms in which the great nemesis hides herself. 1860. End of the Project Gutenberg text of Brother Jacob, by George Eliot. BRJCB by Gutenberg Edition.